Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Pac-Man Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Altvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Carlos, I am absolutely fantastic. Where have all these talented young women come from? It seems like every week we're talking about another teenager at the top of the leaderboards on the LPGA Tour. 17-year-old Brooke Henderson from Canada led three rounds of the Swinging Skirts. Didn't a 17-year-old win that tournament last year? Justin Rose channeled his inner Stephen Curry to win the Zurich Classic. The WGC Match Play this week, and we have interviews with Jack Nicklaus, Nick Faldo, and PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Fincham. Jack Nicklaus, Carlos, took time to tape a few comments for our show. Absolutely amazing. I'm excited. Let's go.
I'm elated. The holder for the most majors, okay, is with us, the Golden Bear himself. Great interview there, Nick Faldo. Wow, incredible. Don't miss it. It's going to be a little bit later on the very important guest of the week. But right now, let's start with the weekend backspin. Fred. World number one, I don't get tired of saying it, Lydia Ko. She birdied there what was the second playoff hole on Sunday and defeated Morgan Pressel and successfully defended her title at the Swinging Skirts LPGA Classic. Yes, she was 17 last year, but she just turned 18 on Friday, okay? After playing, she was playing all day behind. Okay, she sank some clutch birdie putts down the stretch and forced a playoff. She was one shot back of Pressel heading to the 72nd hole when she poured in that birdie from about 12 feet to join her atop the leaderboard. Pressel needed to get close to the pin. She couldn't. She got it about 20 feet and couldn't get that birdie to win it. So for Ko, who turned 18 on Friday, like I said, that this win is her seventh already on the LPGA Tour. Fifth since the start of the 2014 season, and now she's stretching her lead to .69 from .69 average points to 1.77 average points over Imbé Park. Worth mentioning, like you said, is another youngster, and that 17-year-old Canadian Brooke Henderson. She was the second and third round leader. She was up and down all day. Carded 2 over 74, finished sole possession of third place there. Like you mentioned, also on the PGA Tour, Justin Rose, hey, he's peaking at the right time for the U.S. Open, which he won in 2013 after he won for the sixth straight year on the PGA Tour, and that victory at the Zurich Classic helped him move to number six in the world rankings, three spots thanks to his seventh title. Funny thing here that I have to mention, you know, when he made that final birdie effort on the 18, he let out a scream that you would remind you of how one he would make after a big putt at the Ryder Cup, and then he jokingly flexed his muscle walking off the green, but he was really showing off the Zurich logo on his sleeve, which he's an ambassador for the tournament sponsor. But hey, there's no joking about the flex muscle there, because there's little to joke about his golf game over the weekend. He played his final 18 holes in 66, bogey free in 67. He had to play two rounds on Sunday, and he was almost flawless on both rounds. Elsewhere, Lee Westwood won in the Indonesian Masters. He was also struggled to a one over and had to held up Chipchi Nidad, who had a 6-under 66 in the final round to force a tie, but he won in the first playoff hole. In Shanghai, China, Ashun Wu carded 1-under and became the first Chinese native to win on the European Tour event on home soil. Okay, his previous tour finish was a tie for 11 at the 2013 Malaysian Open. And finally, on the Champions Tour, Joe Durant, Billy Andrade held off, Kieran, Sandy Lyle, and Ian Wisdom on the legends there of golf. So sorry, Kieran, they missed. How about that, Fred?
Yeah, Justin Rose, you know, he knew he was playing pretty good. He had a great Masters, took the week off, went and played in the Zurich Classic, and kind of channeled his inner Stephen Curry. He and his caddy went to a New Orleans Golden State basketball, NBA basketball game earlier in the week, playoff game, and he watched Stephen Curry miss a bunch of shots at the beginning of the game, but he just kept firing up, and finally, you know, he started making them later in the game, like any good shooter does. They know the odds are going to get them, and they're going to start making them. And so he took a lesson from that and had a more positive attitude all week. And when he missed a couple putts or didn't play a particular hole that well, he didn't get down. He just kept saying that, you know, same attitude and playing hard, and it served him well. I mean, 22 under for the week, man, that's fantastic stuff. Boo Weekly had a great week. That impressed me. He said he changed shafts in his irons, and that made all the difference. He was way low on proximity to the hole with his greens and reg and things like that. And so he that's not him. He's a great ball striker. Changed some shafts to some true temper shafts and had a really good week. But, yeah, the big story for me, Carlos, was Lydia Ko winning. You know, and the thing is, she won with less than her A game. As you mentioned, it's her seventh PGA Tour win, second this season. She leads everything. Money, race to the CME Globe, Rolex ranking, trips to the bank, all that stuff. When I saw she was within a couple shots heading on the back nine on Sunday, I knew she had a chance because she had not played anything near her best golf all week. Morgan Pressel's two LPGA Tour wins came in 2007-2008. She was the favorite to win, you know, just because she's been a top player. She's number eight on the 2015 money list. She was third a couple weeks ago at the Annie Inspiration, and then runner-up this week. So she's having a really good year. She made some swing changes over the winter, and those are working. She's picked up 10, 15 yards off the tee. That's really made a difference for her. 17-year-old Brooke Henderson, another teenager, led for three rounds. Her two over par 74 on Sunday kind of did her in. She ended up finishing third. Great week for her. But the bad news for her is she had to fly all night, Sunday night, to Dallas to Monday qualify for the North Texas Shootout this week because she's not an LPGA Tour member yet. What a dumb rule. If you finish inside the top 15, you should be given exemption into next week's event. LPGA Tour, you got to get that right. You got to get that fixed. Champions Tour, Legends. They played down in Branson, Missouri, the par 3 top of the rock. A lot of fun to watch them firing at the flags, a hugely successful event. Just firing darts, you know, it was great. Making holes in ones. Joe Durant made a hole in one to help his teammate Billy Andrade shoot 9 under par 45 on the final day for the win. It was the first Champions Tour win for both players. And I have to give this, as you said, Kieran, Sandy Lyle, and Ian Woosnam, they were there. They were the leaders going into the final round, but their couple under par just couldn't handle the blitz that Durant and Andrade put on the final day. And also, Carlos, a final note here, I want to mention that a friend of the show, Tour caddy Basil Van Ruin, had a nasty fall down when the Champions Tour was down in Atlanta at the Gwinnett Championship, down some stairs, hit his head pretty hard, kind of messed him up. He was in the hospital. He's going to get released today, finally from the hospital, and make the trip back here to Ohio. So we wish him all the best.
I second that. We wish you the best. Get well soon, Basil. Well, now it's time. That wraps up our weekend backspin. And now it's time for our Par 5 News, presented to you by United Golf Network. And, Fred, I believe you're going to tee it off with something about Tiger Woods. He's not going to play this weekend, but he's keeping very busy, right? What's going on there?
Yeah, 39-year-old Tiger Woods' invite to the WGC match play got lost in the mail because he's ranked number 106 in the official world golf ranking, and only the top 64 are invited. But that just doesn't mean he's laying around the house, you know, playing with the kids and not doing anything. I think he kind of sees the end maybe nearer than anticipated to his competitive golf career, and he's ramping up his brand for golf course design and other business opportunities kind of after competitive golf is over. He flew to Asia for a series of clinics in addition to announcing a golf course design project in China. Nike Golf said that Woods would be in China and Japan to help stroke local interest in the sport of golf and inspire athletes. The project calls for Woods to scrap an existing in the golf course design, he's scrapping a golf course that's already in existence, the Beijing Tianan Holiday Golf Club, and start afresh. The completed course will be called Pacific Links National Golf Club, and Woods will collect a tidy little, wait for it, $16.5 million for the job. I guess he can afford to fly to China a couple times for that. Woods has played just three times in 2015. His last appearance, a tie for 17th at the Masters. He hurt his wrist in the final round at Atlanta. We all saw that. He hit that root and had to pop his thumb back in place. He is healthy once again. Has announced he will play in the Players' Championship next week. It's also expected he will play in the Memorial Tournament at Muirfield Village in Columbus at the beginning of June, just before a week before the U.S. Open Championship back on the West Coast out at Chambers Bay in the middle of June. And, Carlos, I think you've got a little bit more on Chambers Bay and possibly world number two, Jordan Spieth.
There's, the U.S. Open, like you mentioned, I would say that the favorite label might be up for the debate. But, Rory McIlroy right now is 11-2, according to Bovada. When logic intervenes, is it really a discussion? You know, let's consider this.
Carlos, we lost your sound. I'm going to assume that I'm still on. So I'm going to go into the next item on the news, and that until you can get back on. Phil Mickelson has committed to play in the Scottish Open that will be contested at Galan this year and will have a very big name in the golf. Phil will be in the field. The Scottish Open is held the week prior to the Open Championship, which will be held at the Old Course in St. Andrews. Phil should feel right at home on Galan, as several of the halls offer views of Muirfield, the site of Mickelson's 2013 Open Championship victory. Phil said, "I'm happy to be coming back to the Scottish Open once again and looking forward to playing Galan. I've heard a lot about the course, saw it when I was practicing at Muirfield before the Open a couple of years ago, and I'm really looking forward to playing it." He will be joined in the Scottish Open by Justin Rose, the defending champion, as well as the likes of Luke Donald and Matt Kuchar. Since Aberdeen Asset Management took over the sponsorship of the event, it is rapidly becoming one of the more important tournaments on the European Tour schedule. In choosing to use link-style golf courses, players who like to play their way into majors are using the Scottish Open as a tune-up to prepare for the Open Championship. In other European Tour news, Ian Poulter will skip the European Tour's premier event, the BMW PGA Championship. He feels the course does not fit his game. Poulter is only one of several notable absentees. Fellow Ryder Cup teammates Sergio Garcia and Henrik Stenson have also declined to play. In Garcia's case, it is due to his decision to play in the Irish Open at Royal County Down the week after the PGA Championship. In Poulter's defense, he has joined fellow Englishmen Justin Rose, Lee Westwood, and Luke Donald to commit time to promote and play in the British Masters to be held at Woburn in early October. The defection of Poulter, Garcia, and Stenson is not playing well with the London media. Wentworth is a revered club, and the BMW PGA's €5 million total purse is the largest on the European Tour outside of the major championships. So that's a big tournament over there, and for those guys, for Stenson, Garcia, and Poulter not to show up, kind of as a black eye for those guys, that's not a good deal. Carlos, do we have you back?
Sergio, you have to forgive Sergio. Okay, he's excused. Anytime he's excused. So. Don't
worry
about
your boy.
No,
I'll
excuse him. I'll excuse him for everybody. Don't worry. Hey,
if you'll go
about
back
that.
And no problem.
I'll talk a little bit about the U.S. Open and what you were referring, world's number two. You know, the U.S. Open favorite label might be up for debate. Rory McIlroy is leading right now the pack in Bovada 11-2, but when logic intervenes, is it really a discussion? You know, let's consider these two things. Jordan Spieth is as hot as it can be. He won the Masters, completing a stretch of golf in which he also won the Valspar in the playoff and finished second twice. He's also one of the handful of golfers to have played Chambers Bay, which is the U.S. Open site this year, under stressful conditions. You know, he missed a cut there in 2010 in the U.S. Amateur. Also, his caddy, Michael Glerler, is a Gig Harbor resident who caddied at Chambers Bay when the course in University Place opened in 2007. He estimates that he's had around 50 loops around the links-style scores. Greller also caddied in the 2010 U.S. Amateur for Justin Thomas, who lost in the round of 32 to Scott Strohmeyer. It would be a long shot if any golfer who qualifies for caddy who helps out will know the nuances of Chambers Bay no better than Greller. Throw in then Speed's limited exposure to Chambers Bay. He also played in two summers ago at Greller's wedding. Would anyone really want to bet against this partnership in June? You know, yet the topic of home turf advantage was broached with Geller, who returned to Chambers Bay for the first time in months Monday during his week off, although he has few media interviews and promotion scheduled the week, you know, that follows. But what he feels will be the Duke's biggest advantage that week, he was asked, and he said, you know, honestly, sleeping in my own bed and home-cooked meals are a bigger advantage than the knowledge of the course. He's thinking about that. I loved it. Maybe there's a tad bit of gamesmanship going on, but, you know, Greller has quickly learned a lot about what the best caddies in the world do, how they study a course and communicate it to the other golfers. Caddies not only talk, they share information with one another, and he said that if somebody approaches him with a question about a certain hole, he would be obliged and help. I mean, it is a reciprocating gesture. In April of last year, when Spieth and Greller had no idea about how Augusta National Golf Club played, they sought out advice from veterans, quickly learning some important aspects about the course. And what happened last year? Well, it was a tie for second finish there for Jordan Spieth. And, you know, 13 months later, Fred, we know what happened. Spieth and Greller won the Masters. So home field advantage? How about that?
Yeah, I like Jordan on that golf course. You know, he's playing so well. And, you know, it's going to be a tough place. You know, it's going to be a premium off the tee there and making sure you have the ball in the right place. It's going to be like that aspect in Augusta National. So he's going to be one of the favorites for that for sure. Do you want to go on and cover your other piece, the Fox had more broadcasters?
Sure, I'll do that. The speculation of how Fox Sports might reinvent golf coverage when it begins broadcasting USGA championships this year has been ongoing since the network was first awarded rights in 2013. Will there be new innovative camera angles, glowing ball, colliding robots when returning from a commercial break? You know, it's all an open question until the red lights first go on. But what we do know is that Fox has a capable, experienced executive producer in Mark Loomis. And now we also know Fox quite possibly has the longest roster of on-air talent in history. I mean, it's so long, I would recommend you to get a cup of coffee before reading all the names. In addition to the previously announced core group that included Joe Buck, Greg Norman, Brett Faxon, and Julie Inkster, Fox unleashed a slew of names on Tuesday that will also be used in a variety of capacities this summer. Five names jump ahead of the crowd. Tim Brando, Charles Davis, Joel Klatt, Robert Lucetic, and Kurt Menefee. Yeah, that sounds familiar, right? But Brando is a mainstay on Fox College football and basketball's telecast. He will be the announcer for each day's featured group on the live streaming digital broadcast of the U.S. Open. He previously was the host for digital coverage of CBS presentations of the Masters in 2012 to 2013. Davis, he's a college football analyst who spent 5 years as co-host of the Golf Channel series The Grey Goose 19th Hole, and also served as a tournament director for PGA Tour's Disney Golf Classic from 1998 to 2000. He will be a host and reporter for coverage for the U.S. Open, U.S. Senior Open, and U.S. Women's Open. Klatt, he's a lead college football studio analyst and a host of Fox NFL Kickoff Sunday mornings in the fall of Fox Sports 1. He will be a host and announcer for the U.S. Open 360 channel on the digital platform. Lucetic, he's a FoxSports.com senior golf writer, will be a golf correspondent on Fox Sports 1 throughout the championship season as an analyst for the U.S. Open 360 team. And Menifee, yeah, I know you know that name. He's because he's the host of Fox NFL Sunday. He will be the studio host for the U.S. Open. Those joining Fox in various roles for the USGA events are Shane Bacon, Mark Brooks, Robert Dameron, Jay Delsing, Debbie Doninger, Natalie Golbis, Gil Hans, Buddy Marucci, Scott McCarron, Ned Michaels, Eoghan O'Connell, Joe Ogilvy, Morgan Pressel, E.A. Tischler, and Tom Weisskopf. But that doesn't end there. You know, last night they aired the first ever U.S. Open media special, which originated from the USGA's media day at Chambers Bay, recorded earlier in the day and aired in primetime, hosted by Holly Saunders and Joe Buck, with insights and special features from analysts Greg Norman and Brad Faxon, and included sit-down interviews with USGA Executive Director Mike Davis and President Tom O'Toole Jr., who provided a comprehensive preview of our country's national championship. Also, course architect Robert Trent Jones Jr., he provided a detailed look at the course layout and the challenge links design, while the U.S. Open champion, the reigning one, Martin Kaymer, appeared via satellite, sharing some insights on his championship experience and what he expects from this year's venue. So, I don't know. There's a lot of football people there, Fred. I don't know if they're getting, you know, mixed up football with golf, but I think it'll be interesting what they're going to come up with. What you think?
You know, Carlos, I'm gonna take get on my soapbox here for a second, and you know, the USGA, you know, it's amazing. I can call the PGA, I can call the PGA Tour, I can call the LPGA Tour, find out anything I want to find out. They're very helpful. If I need something, you know, to visit someplace or information about something, they jump right on it. USGA, they don't work with you. I mean, they are the truly stuffy old country club type guys that are really hard to work with. And, you know, as you know, I went up to Chambers Bay last year. I contacted some of the people there at the USGA, and they just, you know, they wouldn't work with you. You know, if you couldn't be there on the media day, they you know, too bad. You know, we don't have time for you. And here they are. They do all this stuff. You know, Fox has paid them $1 billion. I know. We're not paying them $1 billion. I know. But you know what? I'm just, you know, this USGA, they got to, you know what? I'm not on their Christmas list right now. So, hey, Fred Couples was in Dubai last week for the inaugural Icons Cup. What is the Icons Cup, you ask?
The what?
The Icons. You know about the Icons Cup, right? You watched that, right?
Oh, my
well,
God.
Yeah, it was in Dubai. You've been to Dubai. You know Dubai, right? That's where
Rory
goes.
We have fans there, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's where Rory plays all the time. Yeah. Hey, the Icons Cup brought together global sports stars in a Ryder Cup-style team format, with the USA competing against the team from ROTW. You know what that is, right?
What?
The rest of the world. It was played over 3 days last week at the spectacular Dubai Creek Golf and Yacht Club. And the pictures do look spectacular. It is just absolutely beautiful. The U.S. team was captained by Fred Couples and included Tom Glavine, Ray Allen, Marcus Allen, Kelly Slater, Ken Griffey Jr., Greg Maddux, Eric Dickerson, Oscar De La Hoya, Grant Fuhr. If you wanted to get in a fight, he was the guy. Oh, De La Hoya, he's the guy to have there. Brett Hall, Mike Madonna, a couple NHLers, yeah, they'd be good on your team if you're going to be in a fight, and Russ Ortiz. The rest of the world, ROTW team, was captained by Darren Clark. And guess what Darren Clark's also the captain of, Carlos?
Ryder Cup.
The Ryder Cup for 2016. And they were made up of soccer, rugby stars, and some other international celebrity athletes. The U.S. team won handily, 16.5 to 10.5. But one of the main reasons for this whole deal, of course, you know, was the publicity for the Dubai golf club there. But they really wanted the two Ryder Cup captains. And they thought that Freddie Couples was going to be named the other Ryder Cup captain. Well, the task force kind of fooled them on that one. And they chose Davis Love instead of Freddie. So the big news from this whole event, okay, other than those a bunch of old retired sports athletes getting together and playing a little golf on Dubai's dime, when asked about the snub, couples replied, "I think there was an outside shot, and which is why we were both asked to become the Icons Cup captains. When we agreed to do this, I thought Darren had a 75% chance of becoming the Ryder Cup captain." Well, I think he had a little bit more than that chance. "And I thought it was more than 50% for me. As it turned out, he's 100% and I am zero. To be honest, it's disappointing, but they picked a great guy in Davis, and my time might be the next one. I thought I had as good a shot as any other guy getting it, and it would have been unbelievable for both of us to be Ryder Cup captains and be sitting here. I am thrilled for David, and I'm certainly happy for Darren." Freddie's being very diplomatic here. "I'm sure he can get a job at the State Department after this. I am put off by not getting it this time, but having said that, if they ask me for 2018, I will certainly jump at it and accept it." Couples' laid-back attitude masks a very competitive side, which rarely gets exhibited to the outside world. He was a standout as a player on several Ryder Cup and President's Cup teams and has led Team USA to three consecutive President's Cup wins as captain. Did the PGA make a mistake giving a mulligan to Davis Love and not choosing a proven winner in couples? Well, Carlos, we got to wait 17 months to find that one out. And, Carlos, that is it for the Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network. United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn some money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available through United Golf Network with discount coupons for huge savings. They not only have an excellent product line, they also offer every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Another free perk is membership to My Golf in U.S., which offers discounted golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And finally, For Sale by Owner allows you to sell used or new equipment online. So visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity. Carlos, back to you.
Remember, United Golf Network was created by entrepreneurs to give golfers the opportunity to play golf, make money, and enjoy life. That wraps up our Par 5 News. We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we're going to have our VIGs, Jack Nicklaus, Nick Faldo, and Tim Fincham. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG segment, our very important guest of the week. They need no introduction. I just need to say they're Jack Nicklaus, Nick Faldo, and Tim Fincham. You all know who they are. Jack Nicklaus, the all-time winningest major winner. Nick Faldo, Sir Nick Faldo. I'm sorry, Nick. Sorry. Six-time major winner. And Tim Fincham, the PGA Tour commissioner. Fred got him this last week. And to sit down for an interview, and we're very, very delighted to have them. So, Fred, can you tell us a little bit about these three interviews that we're going to play for our guests, for our fans today?
Yeah, the first one will be with Jack Nicklaus. All three of these gentlemen were at the Legends Luncheon, which kind of kicks off the Memorial Tournament that will be held here right at the end of May, beginning of June. And this luncheon is for the benefit of Nationwide Children's Hospital, and Carlos, they raised over $1 million just at this luncheon for the hospital, which is really outstanding. And Nick Faldo will be the 2015 honoree at the Memorial Tournament, and that's why he was there. And Tim Fincham flew up in the jet and joined them for the lunch, and it was great to have him there too. So in this interview, Carlos, you're going to hear a third voice. I will be talking, as well as Jack Nicklaus, Bob Herrig, who is a writer with ESPN and Golf Digest. You will hear him also in the clip a little bit. We start talking about Jack's chipping woes, you know, the way Tiger had chipping in the past. And Jack replied that he had gotten lessons from Phil Rogers back in 1979. I remember that very clearly when he went through that. And throughout the interview, that other voice that you hear is Bob Herrig. So in the second part of the interview, he became more – we talk more about his charitable portion of his life, that he got involved in that by watching his wife Barbara, who will be honored with the Bobby Jones Award this year by the USGA. And you can hear the passion in his voice, and you can see the way that he and Barbara react with the kids. It's just fantastic. And you know what, that's one of the things I took away from this whole thing was that they give an award to one of the kids that have been, you know, have gone through the program there at Children's, whether it was cancer or some other severe illness. And the young man that they honored with an award this year, it's been a three-year bout with him fighting cancer, and he is now back healthy and back to doing the things that he likes to do. And really an outstanding young man, as a senior in high school, and carries a four-point average all through his illness, all through that time in the hospital. But how the Nicklauses react and intermingle with those children and with their families, I mean, they're just like friends. You know, it's just like family. Really, really, really good stuff, Carlos. So really excited for this interview. If you want to go ahead and start it.
Let's play them. I'm going to play all three together, one after the other, and then we'll get back and talk about them. So,
well,
here's the
okay,
first
let
one.
Me talk. Let me talk just a minute. Let me
yes,
go
sure.
on just a minute more then. And sure. Also, at the end of Jack's interview, you'll hear me, we make a little joke about Jack forgetting his bad shots, because Nick Faldo had made a point of that during his little talk at the luncheon. Jack never remembered a bad shot, you know, or a loss. He wipes that out of his memory. And also with Nick, he talks about how Jack inspired him to originally take up golf. Really funny story with his first encounter with Jack Nicklaus. And so we talk about that. And then Tim Fincham talks about some of the problems that they're planning for and looking out for on the PGA Tour, and also a little bit about China. So, yeah, go ahead and play on that, Carlos.
Let's start with Jack Nicklaus.
1979. I got the other 79. I was putting around bunkers. I chunked it and everything. Chunked it or stole it. I did exactly the same thing. And then I went out and called Phil Rogers and said, Phil, I need some help. And Phil's been a good friend, and he said, sure. So we spent about an hour and a half, 2 hours, one day, and then I think about another half an hour another day in L.A. And I just worked on what he gave me, and I took me probably a month before I got to where I felt like he, you know, I didn't want to have a big lump on my throat every time I had to hit a chip shot.
Didn't you hit one in the U.S. Open where you had to really?
Well, I just knew it was the last hole of the tournament. I had 56
that's
yards.
That's what it was.
And I just felt like it. I said, well, Mr. Rogers, this little pitch shot is one that I practiced quite a while. I said, this is going to be the crowning blow if we can play this shot. And I played it perfectly.
So what happened? What got you to that?
I don't know. It's
just
like
it wasn't
here. No, I don't know. You don't know what you get. You get nerves, but you get nerves. I mean, every time Augusta, Tiger pitched the ball beautifully at Augusta last year, and I think Augusta is probably the most difficult golf course to pitch the ball on, because you really are on hard ground around the green with a little bit of ryegrass on it, and it's usually moist, and you really have a hard time actually getting the club underneath the ball without chunking it or scalding it. I think it's a really tough golf course to pitch the ball on. And he did a really good job. He's not going to have any problems out there anymore. That's
okay. That was Friday.
Unless he gets one of his pitches it a couple of times and does it again, then all of a sudden he's going to say, oh, God,
well,
they're
back, right. Not rooting against him, right? You're not rooting for him, but you're not rooting against him.
I've never rooted against anybody. I've never done that. I don't believe in it. I always believe that, you know, I've got a record, and that's my record, and that's what I've done. Come chase it. If you beat it, fine. Or if I'm on the golf course playing and another guy's playing with them, I don't ever want them to screw up. I just want to play better. If I do the best I can and they beat me, fair enough. That's always the way I do. And that way I always got my conscience clear. I've always had my conscience clear because I just never, I've never wished a guy bad luck.
But you understood what Valda was saying.
Do you want him to be, break your record?
Oh, no.
Of course you don't. Oh. No, but I'm not going to wish him bad luck to do that. And I'm just not, I just don't believe it.
When he plays, the reputation.
And I don't think he
did. Oh, right, right.
He was.
His reputation is very focused, not real. I don't know what friendly, whatever you want to call it.
Sociable.
Real sociable.
No,
not real.
He wasn't. But that's, that was what I was talking about. For about a 10-year period, he was just dead focused on what he did. Before he won, you know, he was sort of lackadaisical when he played. Then all of a sudden, he became focused. And then when he got done again, then he basically didn't even play. He just stopped playing.
Is it hard being buddies on the course? I mean, you know, hackers go wrong.
Depends on your personality.
Okay.
Some guys are that way. Trevino's releases to talk.
Okay.
I mean, Hogan, when I played with Hogan in 1960, I mean, Hogan, everybody talked about Hogan and never talked about Hogan. It was fine. I mean, we talked about a lot of different things, walking off the tees and so forth. I mean, he's a 20-year-old kid. He was 53 or 4 years old, whatever he was. When we got about 50, 60, 100 yards, whatever it was from the ball, you were about as mind to have some set up. Did what he did. And if you hit a good shot, it was a good shot. You knew if it wasn't a good shot, he didn't say good shot, you knew it wasn't.
Yeah,
that's just the way it was.
Jack, first time I got to see you play, I'm a 19-year-old hacker out of the farm. Saw you at the Columbus Country Club, the one-day pro-am that you had before you had all this stuff. You drove it into the left trees. You hit it like a little 7-iron, hooked it around, ran it up on the green. And I thought, man, if somebody can do that, Columbus Country Club.
Yeah, but where?
I'm not right. I don't know. It was one of the par fours. I don't even know the course that well. But watched you do that. Can you imagine going back from the one-day pro-am like that to all the good things that you've done here at the Memorial, the Children's Hospital, all the work you've done down in South Florida with the charities and all that kind of thing? Could you ever imagine that?
Well, you know, my wife is basically the genesis of all that. I mean, basically, I was a golfer, and we raised money for the hospital here. I was part of a tournament. It was all tournaments that had some charity involvement. Then all of a sudden, she really wanted to get involved. And when she started getting involved, and I found out how really neat that was, that you really turn around, rather than just giving some money and running off someplace else and not doing anything, to get involved and be part of it and see the kids and how the kids have responded and what the kids have been helped by it. I mean, just like we talked earlier, the Nationwide Children's Hospital saw 1,100,000 visitors last year from 50 countries, or 50, all 50 states and 90 countries, was it?
41 countries.
41 countries?
Yes, sir.
I mean, can you believe that?
And that's just here. And I mean, you have
that's
the same thing
in
down South Florida.
We got the same thing. Miami Children's is a larger hospital than Columbus. And it's not Miami anymore. It's Nicholas Children's Hospital. And it takes all of the southern Florida and all through the Caribbean and South America to come to Miami. So it's really neat to see that happen and neat to be part of it, to know that you're helping people on it. That's what's neat about it. And that's my wife. My wife got me into that part of it. I don't ever want to take credit for that. I'm Barbara's support. And but then once I saw what was happening, I saw how she was doing and what she meant and what it meant by it, I got as enthusiastic about it as she is.
Let's change gears here real quick. You've been in the golf design business for many years. You've seen the ebbs and flows.
Sort of lately.
Well, that's my question. Do you feel like golf is maybe, I mean, given the numbers of the Masters this year, they're up so much, and I don't know, just kind of feel like maybe golf is going to turn around here and kind of be on the upswing a little bit?
I think golf is on the upswing. I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, I know that I did an interview about 6 months ago with somebody. I don't want to mention the name, but his whole agenda was to tell how bad golf was.
Mm.
And I just took the other side of the coin. I said, no. I said, I think golf, and I did. I think golf has turned the corner. And so he used less than 5 minutes of what he talked out of an hour with me. And so, because I just didn't like that agenda. And I said, why would you want to put something down that I don't think is? And now I see, within this last week, I've had three calls for courses in the United States for new courses.
Mm. That's going to be my next question, what you've got going here. And also, I just want to ask you a little bit about China.
But the rest of China's China's got an issue. China's got
they're contracting.
Huh?
They're contracting.
Well, but what China?
Well, they got a lot of tournaments, a lot of stuff going on.
No, they got that. But what China's happened is that Xi Jinping, I guess that's his name.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. He is trying to get rid of corruption in China. And he has a corruption minister, which I think is number six in command. And golf is one of the big things that they saw that the wealthy people get involved in. There was a lot of corruption, a lot of buying off of officials and so forth. And they put a lot of people in jail. They've torn a lot of golf courses up. And they're trying to clean up their act. And I don't think they have – it's not golf. It's just golf is one of the vehicles that they used in corruption and developers and other people. So that's what they're trying to clean up. Now, fortunately, I haven't had any of mine because I haven't had any projects that have been in that category. Probably will. But they're going to clean that up before they really grow again in China. We've still got, I've still got probably between 20 and 30 golf courses of some kind being worked on in China doing something. But they're being very cautious about what they do because of what the government's doing. And I frankly think that the game will be a lot better off when they get done with it. When that'll be, I don't know. But we're really doing... We're doing work, oddly enough, I'm doing a lot of work over in Russia. I'm actually doing golf courses in the stands. I mean, if you never dreamed of even play golf in the stands. I've got a fellow that we just hired that wants to be our representative in the stands because he knows all the governments in the stands. Now, can you believe that?
Yes. Somebody's got to do that.
Well, but in other words, not everything over there is what we read.
True.
I had the chance to go to Turkey last year, and it's fabulous there. It's beautiful.
Yeah, they got a lot of all these countries are nice countries. They've got some issues over there. Obviously, they got some bad issues and stuff that I don't want to get caught up in. Obviously, but I mean, they want to grow the game over there. They want to grow the game through. I've got a golf course in Ajman and one in Oman, which is down the way, down in the Emirates. But and our company has got one in Dubai. We've got nothing in Africa right now. We were in Egypt, but Egypt's going to come back. The game has become a worldwide game.
How much time are you spending out of the country, traveling around and looking at sites and going over things?
Well, when I'm doing it, right now things are. In these countries, it takes a long time to get something done because they're just not used to it. It's just like you're reinventing the wheel. And it just takes a while to get them done. But I'm out of the country half a dozen times a year where I'm going over to Russia a couple times, China a couple times. I've actually got a couple golf courses in Japan right now, which haven't been for years. We've got Korea.
Bahamas, too, you're finishing one?
I've got a couple in the Bahamas. I had a meeting yesterday on a guy with one we're going to do in the Bahamas.
But you're finished.
And I just finished one at Bahamar, which is, you see a lot of ads on television on Bahamar. And that
driven past it.
That's a real, huh?
I driven past it. I was there
it's
a couple
really
months
nice,
ago.
It's a really nice golf course at Cable Beach in Nassau. Mm-hmm. And we got some out islands, which we've got a couple of golf courses that are they're getting ready to go. We're still busy. The difference is that we're starting to travel. But in the last week, as I said, I've had three calls on people in the United States wanting to do golf courses.
We're about
to. Keep me that
alone. A little too early for that.
A little too early for you, yeah.
I got one more question for you. You've said a lot that 1986, finishing up with Jack. Jackie was great on the green. That maybe was your number one moment. What was the biggest disappointment coming off a golf course?
My biggest disappointment?
Or have you forgotten that one?
I try to. I don't really have any big disappointments. I mean, I had the British Open pretty good hand with when Trevino hit it over the green at 17, then he pitched it in. And I thought I won the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach when Watson pitched in. Both of those tournaments I thought I'd won. And it turned out not one. I didn't even go to a playoff. Was that disappointing? Yeah, but the guy just played better than I did.
Thank you so much.
That was the interview for Jack Nicklaus. Let's play now the Nick Faldo interview.
We're happy to be talking to six-time major champion Nick Faldo and honoree this year at the Memorial Tournament in June. Nick, you told some great stories today at the luncheon. You were inspired to start golf watching Jack in 1971.
That's correct. Yeah, it was, you know, thanks to the Masters being beamed over to Britain on the good old BBC, and I finally got a colour TV when I was 12 years old, so I think that probably made a huge difference to see golf in colour. And that was it. I was looking for I had two rules. I wanted an outdoor job and I wanted to be my own boss. So golf was a pretty good choice.
You told a story also about your first meeting with Jack, I believe, at the Open Championship at Troon in 1973. Would you relate that for our listeners, please?
Well, I might have to clean it up for you, but yeah, I went to that Open. It was my first Open at Troon, and I loved to go on the practice ground and watch the guys hit balls. And then I went off to the Porter Johns, as you call them here, and Jack actually jumped over the fence from the back of the hotel to kind of, you know, cut round the back to get to the range without the fans, you know, to get a fast track to the range, and he ran into the Porter John and went in there, and I'm standing outside thinking, oh my goodness, this is Jack, and you know, because when he disappeared and went off, I went in there, and as we say in Britain, I whittled in all the spots where I think Jack might have whittled, so I left my mark on top of his. Oh, I think I'll stop there.
That's a fabulous story. You also mentioned that it was at this tournament that you decided to rebuild the swing that got you going on the run that you got going.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I would a little light bulb went on. Dr. Grew would say light bulb. And I thought back at the end of 84, that was it, my game wasn't right, and I struggled for a couple more months. And when I was here, yeah, I missed the cut. I couldn't hit the 12th green at all. So I think I doubled it both Friday and Thursday and Friday. Anyway, and David Ledward was there, and I'd already decided that Led was the man to work on things. I said, right, come on, let's get started right now. So we started working right there on the range, changing my swing, which was, you know, embarked on quite a project. Not one I'd recommend doing mid-season, but it all came out well in the wash in a couple of years later.
Yeah, from 1988 to 1994, and a lot of people don't talk about this, four major wins, 15 top tens just in that span in like 19 majors, something like that, including three runner-ups and three-thirds. Pretty good run right through there.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, I hit some good consistency where, yeah, I geared up. I started to gear up for the majors. They were the ones that I wanted to win. You know, that really gets you going. That's the whole intensity of this game. You know, how well you play on the Sunday afternoon of a major. Get yourself in that position first. And so you have to prepare for them. You can't... I think I'm, you know, that's what I'm most proud of. You know, when I went to, it's probably started. I went to the 1990 Masters trying to defend that one, and then I then won obviously our Open in 90, and the next Open 92. You know, I went to all those ones as I was either world number one or I was the favorite. And to go to a major really with the intention of winning it is different than just bowling up, thinking, oh, yeah, things feel good this week, maybe something great's going to happen. But to go there prepared and take all the attention and go off and win them, and, you know, those three, you know, I'm really proud of.
Well, you've chosen to go the broadcasting way. You didn't play that much on the Champions Tour. You're going to be making your final start at the Open Championship this July at St. Andrews. I believe it'll be your 20th start in the Open. Is that correct?
I'm not sure those numbers.
Your first was at the age of 19, I believe, right?
Yeah, I played first one in 70, way back, 76 at Birkdale. I played them all until I skipped the 208 one, I think. I skipped a couple, but I don't. I've got a clue how many I played, and I'm not worried about that. I'm just worried about the ones I win. That's what I'm concerned about.
Well, you've got a few claret jugs at home, so that turned out pretty well for you.
Yeah, I do. I'm not a trophy freak, but it's nice to have. I've got the claret jug and I've got the Masters trophy on the on the side there, so it's just nice to have a couple out.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to talk to us. We really appreciate it.
Sure, thank you.
That was Sir Nick Faldo. And now to finish up, let's play the
Hey, Carlos?
Yes.
Let me interject here real quick.
Sure.
Nick was so funny at the luncheon. He was absolutely hilarious. But this is his 34th Open Championship. I was mistaken when I said that. It's his 34th that will be his last one this year. So, and also, he's getting some bad publicity from that luncheon because during his little talk, he said that he was sitting up in the booth for CBS rooting against Jordan Spieth, you know, not breaking his and Jack's record for the 63. And, you know, he was kind of half joking with that. But some of the press wrote it up like he was really seriously. And I'm sure in his mind, you know, he doesn't want it. But he's not rooting against Jordan Spieth. And Nick Faldo was really, really funny and really a good sport. So I just wanted to interject that.
Good, you clarified, because there's a lot of people that don't believe you. So
I'm sorry, I was there. I heard him.
Okay. So I believe you, but I just say the people don't like Nick, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Now let's play now Tim Fincham, PGA Tour Commissioner, the interview.
We're talking with PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Fincham here at the Nationwide Legends Luncheon in Columbus, Ohio. Tim, what brought you to Columbus today?
Well, it's luncheon primarily, and then a meeting here in a few minutes with Jack and some of the folks from the Memorial Tournament and Nationwide talking about the future. But it was impressive luncheon. It's the first one I've been to. Raise $1 million for a lunch is special anytime. But what a great cause, and so much great work has been done here for the Nationwide Children's Hospital. It's great to see.
Jack casts a pretty big shadow, but even more so here in Columbus.
Well, Jack is an icon in the sport, and all our players look up to him and what he stands for, not just as a player, but as a citizen and a role model for their kids. He has an incredible impact on everyone, and the phenomenal thing is that Barbara is equally impactful. And we're delighted to see that Barbara's going to be receiving the Bobby Jones Award this year from the United States Golf Association. She is a world-class individual, and the entire Nicklaus family follows in their footsteps. So I'm sure everyone in Columbus is excited at the fact that this is where they make their home.
Real quick, you've been a PGA Tour Commissioner for several years. You've seen ups, downs. PGA Tour is pretty much on a big upswing right now. Purses are strong, still growing. You've got tours in Latin America, China. You got the web.com going strong, adding tournaments. What is something that you're really working on yet that you see as problems coming down the road maybe?
Well, first of all, several is very kind. It's been over 20. But, you know, we are in a good position because we got so much good young talent coming up in the form of players who look up to the Jack Nicklauses, candidly, and are handling themselves so well. They're exciting inside the ropes, and they're great people outside the ropes. You know, going forward, I think we face the same challenges as other sports. You know, is there going to be another economic downturn, and when? How do we prepare for that? How do we deal with it? Taking advantage of the changing media marketplace. The media in the world is changing so quickly. Trying to stay abreast of that and taking advantage of it for our players and our tournaments. Growing the charitable impact. You know, we have we've reached a point where in most of our tournaments, the communities really understand that we are dedicated to charity, that if you spend a dollar with a tournament, a percentage of that's going to go help people. But we can grow off of that, and we're seeing good growth there now, but we think we can take that to a whole other level. And then in the international area, it would be great if the tours around the world were more balanced, if we had strength in all the continents, and so that not everybody's waking up just wanting to come play in the United States. And so that's a good long-term goal, and to get there, we're trying to help build tours around the world to stimulate interest in the game, grow the game, create more elite players, and eventually have a very balanced situation globally. Now, we're in the Olympics starting next year, and we'd like to see a situation where we're more like soccer. I mean, we're one of the few sports that's played on every continent, but we're imbalanced at the professional level. and we'd like to see a good solid balance. So when you got into world-based competition, it was electrifying all over the globe. So there's work to be done.
Along that line, you've gotten involved with the China Tour. Tell us a little bit about that. Is that meeting expectations? What's going on with that?
It's off to a good start. I mean, the China Tour is really focused on developing Chinese elite players. And to do that, players have got to have, to play on the world stage, they have to have confidence. You can only have confidence by winning or playing very well against good competition. With that in mind, and with golf coming into the Olympics next year, the Olympics is a big thing in China. We're trying to take advantage of those things to really spread. There are real headwinds in China because of governmental regulations, difficulty with land use. But golf is growing. It'll continue to grow, and I think it'll be managed better in China. That's the good news. But from a professional standpoint, we'd like to see more elite players. And I think we're headed very much in the right direction in China.
Tim, thank you so much for taking a minute to talk to us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Well, Fred, there you have them. This was the three interviews, Jack Nicklaus, Nick Faldo, and Tim Fincham. Great interviews. I mean, what can we say about them? Three different point of views. Like you said about Nicklaus, you can really feel when he was talking about Barbara and the efforts. He just put him, hey, I'm her support. You know, I'm her support. He didn't put himself ahead of it, and you can just feel the feeling on that.
Yeah, this was a great event. I was really really fortunate to be invited to come down to it by the Memorial people. And really enjoyed it a lot. Can't wait for next year. Yeah, it was great to get to talk to these guys. I was, you know, as I said there, I was really surprised with Nick Faldo. I always felt he came off a little stuffy. But that day he was just engaging and funny and witty, when he told that story to the crowd about when he was a kid and going in and using the Port-a-Johns on top of Jack Nicklaus, that was just hilarious. The whole crowd just broke up. It was a fun day, and it was great to be able to get to talk to these guys and be able to bring that to the show.
I knew that Nick was going to win over you. I knew it. It was going to come the time that he was going to win.
Well, you know, it's just like last year when I got the chance to talk to Colin Montgomery. I have never been a very big Colin Montgomery fan. And, you know, the perception portrayed through the media was that he was a whiner, crybaby, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, I found him very engaging, very funny, the English humor. And, you know, I did get a chance to talk to him one-on-one a little bit, and he was very, very forthcoming. And so, you know, once you get a chance to meet some of these guys, it's a little different story.
What happens there is that, you know, we've been hanging out too much with Kieran, so we're getting used to that English thing and that thing. No, that's the thing. It's Kieran's fault. Well,
speaking of that, Carlos, I'm not going to be able to be here next week, so he's going to be here, so you can get on
here,
top of it.
So for all of you that want to hear Kieran back, he's going to be with me next Tuesday, which happens to be my birthday, May 5th, the Cinco de Mayo, so we'll see. Anyway, that's our very important guest of the week segment. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to take the practice range, and we're going to talk about the WGC match play. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a subject and we start taking shots at it, and that's why we call it the practice range. This week, we're going to talk about the WGC Match Play, the WGC Cadillac Match Play Championship, where the best players in the world, minus Phil Mickelson, maybe Tiger Woods, let's say it, yeah, minus Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods, have assembled at the TPC Harding Park in San Francisco this week for the WGC Cadillac Match Play. Jason Day of Australia, he's the defending champion. All of us remember last year when he came through an epic final there against Frenchman Victor Dubuisson at the 23rd hole. Dubuisson, we all remember, magical, twice, saved par from the desert to keep the contest alive before they finally secure the win with a birdie at the fifth extra hole. This event was first contested in 1999 when Jeff Maggard saw off Andrew Mackey in the final. The fact they were the 24th and 50th seed says something about the possibility for upsets in this tournament. Tiger Woods is the only man so far who has come into the event as the top seed and gone on to win. He achieved that feat three times, 2003, 2004, and 2008. There have been some unlikely winners of this event over the years, including Kevin Sutherland in 2002, the 62nd seed, and Jeff Ogilvy in 2006, he was the 52nd seed. However, the new format should lessen the chance of upsets, as the top seeds will have three matches to prove their superior ranking. Well, it might not turn out that way, mind you, but we'll see. How about that new format? The top 64 available players in the official World Golf Ranking will tee it up this week. There's a new format, as well as a new sponsor for this year's tournament. The players have been split in 16 groups of four, the first of each according to their seeding of 1 through 16, then a player drawn at random from each of the three pools. Pool 1 is a player selected 17 to 32, Pool 2, player seeded 33 to 44, and Pool 4 is player seeded 49 through 64. With each of the 16 groups, the four players will face each of the others in the round-robin match play over the first 3 days of competition. The golfer who comes out of this contest with the best record in each group will go on to the round of 16 on Saturday morning, where elimination match play will establish the players going to the quarterfinals in the afternoon. Then the semifinals and finals will be contested on Sunday. The world number one, Rory McIlroy, is the top seed in group number one. He'll be facing Jason Duffner on Wednesday, and the others in his group are Billy Horschel and Brent Snedeker. Jordan Spieth will be teeing it up against late entrant Mikko Ilonen in group two. He'll then face Matt Every and Lee Westwood in the round-robin stages. If both of them make it through the group stages and then the knockouts, they will face each other only in the finals. Other intriguing groups, I would say, for this group 8, where powerhouse Dustin Johnson will face last year's runner-up Victor Dubuisson, 2011 Masters champion Charles Schwartzel, and Matt Jones. Group 10 is an all-European affair featuring, yes, you listen, Sergio Garcia, Jamie Donaldson, Bernd Wiesberger, and Tommy Fleetwood. Match play specialist Ian Poulter, he will have his work cut out to come through Group 11. He's going to be facing Webb Simpson on day one, long hitting with Gary Woodland on Thursday, and on form Jimmy Walker on Friday. So, you know, this is a great event. I think the new format for it gives us a lot more chances to see the top players continue to play more. And maybe, like I said, maybe that helps them out in the long run.
Yeah, this is really a big change for this thing, and it just shows that this tournament is still struggling to find its real identity. You know, it's been around for a while, and, you know, as you mentioned, Carlos, the first thing for this week is that, guess what? Tiger Woods is not eligible, and Phil Mickelson withdrew. You know, so they're still having kind of the same old problems when those guys didn't show up and play in Scottsdale in the match play. Phil said, "I'm really happy with the new format, and the TPC Harding Park is a terrific setting for match play. So it's unfortunate that I won't be able to play this year. I love it, but I ain't coming." You know, Phil is ranked just outside the top 16 right now. He's at number 18 on the OWGR. So he would not have been a number one seed in any of the 16 brackets. Could that have been the reason he didn't show? I don't know, but if he had played and finished high, it could have been a good sign. You know, he did play well at the Masters the last time he played. So I have a feeling, Carlos, this is a grueling week for these guys. You know, we're talking about a lot of matches, a lot of walking. I have a feeling his people convinced that this is just too strenuous a week for him, and he's saving himself for later in the year at the majors and the FedEx Cup playoffs. You know, for Phil, with his arthritic condition, to do all that, walking those hills, all that through the week, if he would go deep into that, that's asking a lot of him. But all that said, guess what? Who needs him? Remember Ricky Fowler, Ernie Els, Jason Day, and Victor Dubuisson last year? Who can ever forget the Frenchman Dubuisson getting up and down from the desert cacti and everywhere else? Jason Day played great, and the whole event was a success. Match play at Harding Park should be fantastic. It's a great golf course. As you mentioned, the top 64 players in the world, minus Phil, who's replaced by Mikko Ilonen. And it's going to be divided into the four-player groups. They're going to play three rounds, so everybody gets to play Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Then the player with the most points is going to go on. You can look in any one of the 16 brackets. In most of them, you got one or two guys that look good. One of them that jumps out to me is the Jimmy Walker group. You've got it's group 11. You've got he and Wood Simpson, Webb Simpson, and Gary Woodland. But I can't talk about it. Gary Woodland, Webb Simpson, and Ian Poulter, all with Jimmy Walker in that group. So that's going to be a pretty tough group to come out of, I got a feeling. Spieth and Rory, Rory's got Duffner. Duffner's not been playing that good since he lost all his weight, and he lost his wife, so he lost 100-some pounds right there. Snedz is in that group, though, and Horschel. So, and Rory's never been that great of a match player. I doubt if Rory gets out of his bracket. I look for Snediger or maybe even Horschel to come out of there. I wouldn't be surprised. You just have to look through the bracket, see who you like. I've got some picks for later. I wanted to mention real quick, Carlos, before I let you back in here, that the Harding Park is a TPC course now. They took over running it. It's owned by the city. It's a municipal course. It's right beside the Lake Merced where it's a par 71 right beside Lake Merced where the LPGA Tour played the Screaming Skirts last weekend. It was built in 1925 by the same guys that designed nearby Olympic Club, the Olympic Club's lake course. And the course, Carlos, I didn't know if you knew this or not, but it was named for President Warren G. Harding. And I didn't know if you knew where Warren G. Harding was from, Carlos.
Let me give it a hard guess. I mean, this is just out of the park. Is he from Ohio?
He's from right here in Ohio. Matter of fact,
really?
He grew up not 20 miles from where I was born and raised. So, you know, he was probably one of the worst presidents we've ever had, but he was from Ohio. the timing of this thing, Carlos, they bumped it back here to late April. It was played in February at Dove Mountain in Arizona. The players never did like it there. They didn't like the golf course. They didn't like it in February. So the PGA Tour is moving it. This is just a one-year deal for Harding Park. Next year the tournament moves to Austin and replaces the Valero Texas Open just 2 weeks prior to the Masters. So that's going to be a little different deal there. And the past concerns have been that the top players get knocked out early. Matches are lopsided. They only are over by the 12th hole, or they go long and spoil TV time slots. So everyone talks about loving match play, but few players really do. But it's always fun to watch to see who makes it through, and you could have some real upsets this week, Carlos.
I'm totally for it. And, the course here has hosted a WGC event before. That was when it was named the American Express Championship of 2015, in which Tiger Woods defeated John Daly in a playoff. It was also the venue for the President's Cup in 2009. And I remember Tiger Woods back then when he won in 2005, and also Phil Mickelson. They both said that this course is playing longer, than, even though it has a short yardage. So, you know, take it for what it's worth. That was in 2005. That's 10 years ago. But anyway, we have to see about which players are going to pick this week to win. I'm going to throw out four names. You know, clearly the top seeds like Rory and Jordan will be the big favorites this week, but who might surprise from a little further down the list? I am looking for, you know, I think Justin Rose is playing excellent. He's just peaking at the right time. Just to know if he would win. And just to mention something about what you said about Phil Mickelson, I have to agree with you. I think, you know, to win this tournament, you have to win seven matches. Seven matches in 5 days. I mean, that's super, super strong. So, I don't know. I have to agree with you. I think they told him, hey, take a rest. But anyway, getting back to the players, I would say I'm going to give you out four names. Okay, I'm gonna say my guy, and I'm not gonna talk about Sergio. I picked him last year. He's
not Sergio. Sergio's not up there.
No,
come
no,
on.
No, no, it's gonna be Hideki Matsuyama.
Okay.
You know, he's been playing some supreme consistently golf of late, and he's currently ranked third on the PGA Tour on the all round stats. So look out for Hideki. And Louis Hyson, you know, he's coming to his event on a run of good form. He played solidly at Augusta. He then finished in the tie for 7th in Harbour Town the following week. So, hey, look out for him. Louis has the style to win here. I can't bet even. You know, it doesn't matter where Ian Poulter, if he has a tough draw, he can beat anyone at match play. He's a former winner of this event. The fact that it's a shorter course will suit him perfectly. But my pick to win in this one, you're not
drum roll.
Yep, it's going to be Paul Casey. You know, he is almost back to his best. He's been twice the runner-up in this event, and it wouldn't be a surprise to see him go one better this time out. He's playing great, and I think he has to right now the form and the play to win it. You know, I just go with him. You know, the skill to win here is just winning matches. It doesn't matter what you score in this event. You just have to outplay your opponent on that day. Having the tactical news to do just what it takes will be the key this week, and I think Paul Casey has to for this week.
You know, I have to applaud you. You kind of went outside the box here a little bit. You did some research. You know, good picks there. I like the Poulter pick, possibly. Hideki, I think he's just too young. I'm not buying that one yet. Paul Casey, I think he could make it to the round of 16, the quarters. Very possibly could, but I really got to think that I really think the winner's got to come from Jordan Spieth, Patrick Reed, Ricky Fowler, or Jason Day. And if you want a veteran to pick, Jim Furyk. Furyk's on a roll. He's playing well. This is a perfect golf course for him. He played well when the Open was over at the Olympic here a few years ago, so he likes that area. This should be a good golf course for him. And I, you know what? I just think Patrick Reed, Ricky Fowler, I think those guys, it's time for them to step up. They're match play guys. This is a great event for them. So I don't think Rory's going to get out of the round robin play, out of the pool play. He just hasn't had that much experience at Harding Park, and you know he just hasn't shown that much in match play over the years. He's played well in Ryder Cup when paired with somebody, but you know the other guy seems like whenever they're paired with Rory, they come on fire. Whether it's Luke Donald or Poulter or Justin Rose or whoever's paired with him, it seems like they play tremendous. And outside, I guess I have Justin Rose here as an outside pick because he is playing with a ton of confidence right now. And Jimmy Walker's a guy that can beat anybody in the world right now, but he's got to come out of the same group that Poulter's in. So, you know, whoever comes out of that group, you know, could very well win it because that's a tough bracket.
Oh, definitely. But I still go in with my guy there. Paul Casey's going to win it. I've been hot with the picks lately, so Paul Casey.
That's
watch
my story,
it.
And I'm sticking to it.
And I'm sticking with Paul. We'll see. We'll see next week. Just listen to it on iTunes because I'm not going to be here, but you'll see. I'm going to make a big fuss after Casey wins.
Okay. All right. I'll be listening. Well, I might even call in. I might be able to have time to call in. We'll see, but you know.
I'll call you if he wins. I'll call you.
Okay.
And I'll tape it for the show. You know, it's just to tell you.
All right.
That wraps up the practice range. We're going to take our last break. When we come back, we're going to have some final putts for you. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and first, before I go to my final putts, Fred, don't call if your guy wins. It's just, I will call you if Casey wins. Okay?
Don't call me,
don't
I'll call you.
Don't call me,
you.
I'll call you, okay? There you go. Let's go for the final putts, and I'm going to talk first about Mark Leishman. You know, he will never fear anything on the golf course again after he came perilously close to losing his wife, Audrey, to illness. Leishman, who missed his place in the Masters to be by Audrey's side as she battled acute respiratory distress syndrome and toxic shock syndrome, has revealed doctors gave her, the mother of the two, a 5% chance of surviving her ordeal. But showing an incredible will to fight, Audrey is back at her Virginia Beach home and on her way to a full recovery. That meant that Leishman was back on tour this past weekend, and he was on track for a course record before bad weather forced a halt to the second round of the Zurich Classic at TPC Louisiana. On Friday, he had only the 18th hole to play to complete his round on Saturday, needing a birdie to set a course record, but he missed, but ended up firing a 10 under par 63. He finished T28th at 14 under, 8 shots behind Justin Rose. So that's great. First and foremost, great to see that his wife is doing well. And we're here at the Back Nine Report. Wish her and Leishman the best. So continue with the full recovery for Audrey there. And one last note from me, Tim Clark, you know, South African, he withdrew from the WGC Match Play Championship to be played this weekend because he's still recovering from the elbow injury. He has not played since the Sony Open in early January. Luke Donald's not playing because of his brother's wedding, so Clark will be replaced by Francesco Molinari of Italy in the 64-man field, Fred.
Yeah, on mine, Carlos. Well, first of all, before we get in, I have a question of the week for you, Carlos. Are you worried about the damage? Are you worried about the damage done to Rory McIlroy's psyche after he lost the arm wrestling match to that teenager last week?
He's done. He's done. I mean, that was him. He's done. I don't see him even making a cut anymore.
That's going to haunt him forever.
Yeah, forever.
Well, I mentioned earlier about Faldo was taking heat after comments he made at the Legends Luncheon at Columbus, and you know, I think it's kind of some unfair shots, but that's what writers do sometimes. But also, Dame Laura Davies visited the World Golf Hall of Fame last week. It was her first visit to that to the World Golf Hall of Fame. I'm casing a joint, Davies laughed, as she stood in the collection storage area in the museum, surrounded by all the books, clubs, balls, bags, trophies, and other historic items. But soon, she's going to be a permanent resident of the museum. She's going to be inducted into the hall in July with Mark O'Meara, David Graham, and A.W. Tillinghast in a ceremony at St. Andrews University. You know, Carlos, while I'm here, you know, A.W. Tillinghast, you know, was a famous architect, you know, designed some great golf courses that still host a lot of major championships today. And I didn't know if you knew, do you know where A.W. Tillinghast, where he's buried, Carlos?
Not here in Puerto Rico. I don't recall that. I looked around here. Where is it?
If you would read the NW Golf Links magazine, Carlos, he is buried right here in Toledo, Ohio. See, you don't believe me. I keep telling you, Toledo is the center of the golf universe. You never believe me, but I keep telling you. So.
Okay, now I'm inspired. When I die, I want to be buried there.
Come to Toledo. We got a hole. We got a hole for you. Anyhow, Dave Laura Davies going into World Golf Hall of Fame at St. Andrews in July. Should be cool. She's been a tremendous player for the Ladies European Tour and on the LPGA Tour. Carlos, that's all I have for April the 28th, 2015 Back Nine Report.
Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past hour and 20 minutes. Special thanks to our VIGs, our very important guests of the week, the Golden Bear, Jack Nicklaus, Sir Nick Faldo, and the PGA Tour Commissioner, Tim Finchem, for taking their time and giving us those great interviews. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio and also through TuneIn or download our show on TuneIn on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow our show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. So happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.